Amen. God is good, isn't he? All the time. God is good. Boy, you guys just don't repeat back very well. Used to that African church, man. You say that and everybody's blasting. Hey, if you will, turn your Bibles to Revelation chapter 17. Revelation 17. We have just finished up in chapter 16. The seven bowls of God's wrath has been poured out. So God's wrath has been poured out on the earth. You'd think, okay, now we're done with the earth, and we're moving on to the heavenly realm, the return of Christ, and the new heaven and the new earth. But we're not there yet, because as happens in Revelation, there's an event, a big picture given of the great event that takes place, and then God kind of zooms in a little bit, and okay, we're going to get a few more details about some things. And in chapter 16, we saw the wrath of God being poured out. We saw the destruction of humanity. We saw the judgment upon the sinful humanity. Well, in chapter 17, this begins the third vision in the four visions that make up the book of Revelation. And Jesus is revealing to John the things that are happening, but he's also explaining some things to him. And in the last part of chapter 16, we saw this Babylon that's talked about. And it says in the last portion, verse 19 of this chapter 16, says, "The great city was split in three parts, and the cities of the nations fell. Babylon the Great was remembered before God to give her the cup of the wine of his fierce wrath." So he introduces and talks about the great city, Babylon. Well, in chapter 17 and 18, actually, these next couple of chapters, he's going to explain a little bit more about who Babylon is. What city is this? What's he referring to? And so in chapter 17, he goes into a little bit more detail. So, and we're going to read through, and I'm not going to read the whole chapter, so there's no need for you standing during this time, but we're going to just take chunks of it and begin to talk through it. Chapter 17, verse 1 says, "Then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and spoke to me, saying, 'Come here, and I will show you the judgment of the great harlot who sits on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth committed acts of immorality, and those who dwell on the earth were made drunk with the wine of her immorality.'" So one of these seven angels, we don't know which one, that had these seven bowls of the wrath of God, comes to John and says, "Okay, I want to give you a little bit more information about this particular one. I want to give you a little bit more information about this judgment that's coming upon this great harlot." And he describes Babylon as a harlot, a city of harlotries. And if you look back in the Old Testament, when the people of God were wandering away from God and they were worshiping false gods, what did he call that? Harlotry. They were committing harlotry with the other nations. They were chasing after harlots. They had become a harlot. And they had many lovers, like a harlot. So he used this adultery, this harlotry, as a symbolism for the spiritual adultery that was taking place in the people of God. Well, here this city is the, I guess, the epitome, the culmination, the source of all the harlotries, the adulteries, the spiritual adultery of the earth. And spiritual adultery always produces itself or shows itself, demonstrates itself in immorality and immoral people. So he describes her, says, "Come here and I'll show you the judgment of the great harlot who sits on many waters." And the one who he gives specific instructions or specific description of this one with whom the kings of the earth acted immorally, and many were made to drunk with her immoralities. So verse 3, it says, "He carried me away in the spirit." So when you see this phrase, "He carried me away in the spirit," or "I was in the spirit," that's the beginning of a new vision that John is seeing. So the old, we're separating from the second vision that we saw, Now we're entering into the third, and there will be another one coming up later on. So in this third vision, he's looking at the things that happen from a worldly perspective. In the third vision, we saw things from a heavenly perspective. We saw things that were going on in heaven. We saw the things that were happening on the earth from a bird's eye view, from a heavenly vision. And now he's dropped down. We're going to an earthly vision of the things that happen in the end and how God judges this world. So it says, he carried me away in the spirit into a wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast, full of blasphemous names, having seven heads and 10 horns. Now, earlier, chapter 13, we saw another woman that was carried into the wilderness. Who was that? It was Israel. It was the people of God. They represented that the beast was fighting against this woman. He was trying to devour the child, the man-child that was about to be born, Jesus. So the woman that was described in chapter 13 was the people of God, and she was carried off into the wilderness and protected from Satan and his onslaught against God's people and God's plan of salvation for humanity. Well, here we see a different woman. We see another woman, but yet she is clothed very distinctly, very royally. She has, and she's sitting on the scarlet beast, and he spends a good bit of several words here or descriptions of this beast, full of blasphemous names, having seven heads and 10 horns. Again, we saw this same beast in chapter 13, verse 1. This is the Antichrist. This is the beast that comes up out of the sea and has the blasphemous names of seven heads, 10 horns. The heads represent wisdom, the horns, power. Verse 4, the woman was clothed with purple and scarlet and adorned with gold and precious stones and pearls, and having in her hand a gold cup full of abominations and of unclean things of her immorality. So this woman's described as very, very well dressed. She's dressed in purple and scarlet, the colors of royalty, the colors of power. She is very well to do. She's adorned with precious stones and pearls and gold. She's a very rich woman. She's a very well to do woman. She is the epitome of high class and high society. So this woman is very well off. This woman is very rich. This woman is in a place of authority. It says she has in her hand a gold cup, a gold chalice. Looks good on the outside. It represents very much wealth and affluence. But the cup is full of abominations and of the unclean things of her immorality. It's full of wickedness. It's full of vile. It's full of detestable things. It represents the world view or a world power. We're going to look at it as we get a little bit further down, the different kingdoms of the world that rise up and the different kings and the powers that rise up. We have kingdoms, we have nations that rise up, we have world powers that rise up, and they're very affluent, very rich, very wealthy, look good on the outside, but they eventually become filled with vileness and abominations. You go all the way back to Babylon, the Assyrians, the Persians, world powers, wealthy beyond measure, but very wicked and very vile. The United States. I mean, you look at us. We have come up. We are a world power. We are very rich. We're the wealthiest country and nation that has ever been on the face of the earth. We have rose to power and wealth beyond imagination, faster than any other nation in history. But yet we're getting more and more depraved. We're getting more and more vile. We're getting more and more immoral. The government is becoming more and more corrupt. And so it's just the way that things, the progression of this world. When people come to power, greed and selfishness takes over and governments become wicked. So this woman that he sees represents a world government, represents a city that will be in great power, be very rich, be very well-to-do, Verse 5 says, and on her head a name was written, a mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of harlotries and of the abominations of the earth. So she's given a name, Babylon the Great, this great city of power, this great place of authority and world domination, great city of wealth, but she is the mother of harlots and of abominations. She is the source. She is where all the abominations of the world flow from. It's a world power that is corrupt. It's a world power that is enticing others to pour into her and look to her and trust her, and yet she's leading them astray. Then verse 6, we see this woman in a different state. First time we saw her, she was sitting on a great beast. She had purple and scarlet robes adorned with gold, precious stones, and pearls. Verse 6, and I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the witnesses of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered greatly. This woman, this world power, is one that is going to be turning against not only God, but against the people of God. It says she's drunk with the blood of the saints. She's drunk with the blood of the witnesses of Jesus Christ. She is going to be a world power that turns against God's people and tries to stamp out everything about God and His name. Now, there have been powers, there have been kingdoms that have tried that, and we're going to look at those in just a few minutes. But this one, this particular one in the end, is going to be greater, more effective than all the others that have been in the past. It says, and when he saw her, he wondered greatly. He was in amazement. He was in awe. He was stunned. And the angel said to me, why do you wonder? I will tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carries her, which has seven heads and 10 horns. The beast that you saw was and is not and is about to come up out of the abyss and go to destruction. So he says that the first time he describes him, he says the one that was, that is not, is about to come, and then is going to go to destruction. And those who dwell on the earth, whose name has not been written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, will wonder when they see the beast that was and is not and will come. Here is the mind which has wisdom, the seven heads and the seven mountains on which the woman sits, and they are seven kings. Five have fallen, one is, and the other has not yet come. And when he comes, he must remain a little while. Now, a lot to dig into here. There's a lot of speculation about what this means. But let's back up for just a second and look at this one, this beast that you saw in verse 8. It says, the beast you saw was and is not and is about to come up out of the abyss and go to destruction. This is Satan. This is the beast that comes up, the one that is going to come up to empower and enable. Remember the red dragon that called the beast from the sea and the beast from the land and gave them power. He is going to be the ultimate source of this city's power and this city's dominion and this city's rule and authority. But it's going to be led through a human being or led through a man, maybe Satan in the flesh, or it may be someone who is just simply completely given over. But the Antichrist is going to be the one that's in charge, but his power is going to come through Satan himself. It is the final attempt of Satan to rule the world in the place of God. Verse 9. Here is the mind that has wisdom. The seven heads are the seven mountains on which the woman sits. Now in first century, when John was writing this, this describes Rome, the city of Rome. It was seated on seven hills, and it consisted of seven hills. So in John's time, Babylon was represented by Rome. He's not talking about the one up here, that it's at the first part of this chapter. The great city Babylon. He's talking about a future Babylon. But in John's time, Babylon is represented by Rome. And look what it goes in verse 10. He says, and they are seven kings, five have fallen, one is, The other is not yet come, and when he comes, he must remain for a little while. Now, there's been several different ways or attempts to interpret this. Some have tried to say these are seven specific rulers or kings or emperors, seven specific men or individuals. It's hard to do that, because if you just simply go back in time and start looking at the kings who are rulers of the world and identify seven of them that have attacked the people of God, tried to stamp out Christians and have martyred Christians, there are a whole lot more than seven of them. So how can you find the specific seven that are listed here? Well, there's a particular commentator that I like what he describes, and he ascribes to a particular interpretation that I think fits it a lot better. And he calls it, or he says that these seven kings are symbolic kings. Not necessarily seven individual rulers, but they symbolize the completeness of time, the completeness of world domination by Satan, the completeness of rulers over time that war against God's people. And he says that John is using, or John is writing with a technique called corporate solidarity. In other words, one man represents a whole kingdom. Rather than it talking about a specific king, it says there are seven kings. These seven kings represent seven kingdoms rather than seven individual kings like some try and interpret it as. And I think that fits it much better. An example of corporate solidarity. Remember when David fought Goliath? When David fought Goliath, he fought one man but defeated the whole army. If you read in 2 Samuel, I think it's 2 Samuel 17, that fight where it says that he brought destruction upon the whole army of the Philistines, but he only fought one man. Goliath said, look, you come fight me, you send your best man, I'm going to come out and we're going to fight, and whoever wins takes all. If we win, then you're going to serve us. If you win, we'll serve you. Corporate solidarity, one representing the masses. All right? Same thing happened in Daniel when Nebuchadnezzar had his vision. And the great statue was made up of all the different types of metals. There were four metals that represented four kingdoms. But he said the head of gold, which represented Babylon, he said, that is you, O king, individually. So Daniel said, King Nebuchadnezzar, the gold head is you, and you represent the entire kingdom of Babylon. Corporate solidarity, one representing the whole kingdom. So easily says that that's probably what's happening here. When he says kings, one king represents a kingdom. All right? So he says there are seven kingdoms that rise up and are waging war against the people of God. And if you go back in history, it fits much better than trying to find seven specific individual kings that do. The first one would be Egypt. I mean, Egypt enslaved the Israelites. They were the first ones that tried to hold down God's people. The Assyrians would be the second. They were the ones that came in and captured the northern kingdom. They were the world power that started trying to overthrow the Israelites. They got the northern kingdom but were unsuccessful in defeating Jerusalem and Judea. Then you had the Babylonians. They came in and they overthrew the Assyrians. They overthrew Jerusalem, destroyed and burned the temple, and overrun Judea. Then you had the Persians, who defeated the Babylonians and subjugated the Israelites. The fifth kingdom would be the Seleucid Empire. Now, these were the successors to Alexander the Great, and around 168 AD, or excuse me, BC, not AD, before Christ, 168 BC, they're the ones that defeated Jerusalem. They're the ones that set up the abomination of desolation. They sacrificed the pig on the altar, and they destroyed the temple, and they outlawed Judaism completely. So the first five that have already been in John's time would fit these five kingdoms that were trying to stamp out God's people and to do away with God completely. So he says there are five have fallen in verse 10. There are seven total. Five have fallen. One is. So in John's time, what kingdom is? Rome. And one that has not yet come. That's the Babylon the Great that he's talking about here. At the end of time, this coalition of power on the earth under one man, under in one city, one rule, one world government that's going to be set up is this new Babylon the Great. And from this authority, from this city, from this world power, Satan is going to work at destroying the people of God and the work of God and set himself up as king, as God. So I think that fits a little bit better than trying to find seven specific kings and trying to figure out which king individual would be the one that's represented by Babylon the Great. So have I completely confused everybody? We good so far? Okay, good deal. I just feel like I'm throwing a whole bunch at you. The fifth one, the Seleucids. That'd be S-E-L-U-C-I-D, Seleucid. I believe that's right. That's when you had the Maccabean revolt and a lot of things that went on in history. So you've got these five kingdoms that already fell. Rome is the one that is, and then there is one that is yet to come, which is Babylon the Great. Verse 11. The beast which was and is not is himself also an eighth one and is one of the seven. So here, the angel throws a curve at John. Okay, he said there's seven kings. Now he said the Antichrist is an eighth, but he's also one of the seven. It's kind of like a forerunner, a representation. You remember when the prophecy of Jesus was coming, said that Elijah would come before him and prepare the way for the Messiah. And Jesus said, well, if you'll believe it, Elijah has come. It was John the Baptist. He was like an Elijah. He was one crying out in the wilderness, making straight the way of the Lord. He was in the spirit of Elijah. So what easily says and that this could mean is that when he says there is an eighth one, but he was also one of the seven that he's similar to. It would be, I guess it would be kind of like he's similar to the Roman emperors or similar to others. It could be someone like Hitler. Could be someone like Stalin. All of these great military powers, these people that rose up as dictators, what was the first thing they did? Well, the two things they did. One, they took the guns away from the people. And the second thing they did is they outlawed God. They declared the religion of the state to be atheism. There is no God. We are God. And we are absolute authority. So it could be that he's saying the eighth one, this last one, that's going to be ruler of Babylon the Great, the Satan himself embodied, or this Antichrist, the fulfillment of the Antichrist that's been around for all the ages. Paul said that the spirit of the Antichrist is already here when Paul was writing his letters. Whoever's against Christ, whoever's trying to stamp out the name of God, whoever's trying to use their authority to martyr Christians and to squash the spreading of the gospel, that is the spirit of the Antichrist. So he says the eighth one is also one of the seven. He's still in that same lane. He's still in that same vein of leaders who are trying to destroy anything about God in society. So he says he is also one of the seven, and he goes to destruction. He's not going to be successful. Verse 12, the ten horns, what you saw, are ten kings who have not yet received a kingdom, but they receive authority as kings with the beast for 1 hour. These have one purpose. They give their power and authority to the beast. So he's saying the ten horns represent ten puppet kings. This one world government is going to be seated in one place, in one city. Think of it as, and I'm not saying that this is what it is, but think of it as the UN. The UN is seated in one city. And then if they are the governing body of the entire world, they will have governors in other places that answer to them. And so what he's saying here, that these ten horns are ten kings. They don't have a kingdom, but they're given authority so that they can give their authority and lead the people to follow the Antichrist, to follow the one world government. So these are puppet kings. These are governors that are placed over parts of the world. There are ten of them. The world will be divided into ten kingdoms or ten regions or ten, however you want to divide it up. But these puppets will be in place, and they're put there for one specific reason: to consolidate all the world's power and all the world's wealth under Babylon the Great, this one world government that's going to be established under the Antichrist. That's their only purpose. They have no power other than to bring people to subjection of this one world government. And they're only for a short period of time. Look what it says, the end of verse 12. But they will receive authority as kings with the beast for 1 hour. And they have only one purpose. They give their power and authority to the beast. And these will wage war against the Lamb, and the Lamb will overcome them, because He is the Lord of lords and the King of kings. And those who are with Him are the called, the chosen, and the faithful. And He said to me, the waters which you saw where the harlot sits are the peoples, the multitudes, and the nations, and the tongues. So He says they're these ten kings are gathering the wealth, the authority, the allegiance of all the world under this one world government to wage war against Jesus, against the people of God, but they will not last because the Lord is the King of kings and the Lord of lords. So they're not going to be successful. They're not going to overthrow God. They're not going to push God out. But they will wage war. So we've seen in chapter 16, we saw the battle of Armageddon. We saw them waging war. And now he's given us kind of an earthly view of how this takes place. There's going to be one who raises up, that Satan raises up as the Antichrist. He's going to establish a one world government. He's going to be the leader of all the world. And there are going to be puppet kings or puppet leaders under him that rally and point everyone to him. And all the nations of the world will be under this one world government, including America, if we're still around. We will be part of it. And all the purpose, the whole purpose of this one world government is to wipe out the name of God, to do away with God, to replace God with government as the Savior, with government as the provider, with government as the end-all and be-all, and pointing people to bow down and worship the beast. But he says, he describes in verse 14, those who are with the Lord, the Lamb, they are the called, the chosen, and the faithful. Man, I'm glad I'm part of that number. It says these are the called. They're called by God. It's not a choice we make. He said, Jesus said, I have chosen you. You didn't choose me. We are chosen by the Lord, and we are the faithful if we are following faithfully. He said, the waters in which you saw the harlot sitting are the peoples. It's the people of the earth that have rejected God, who uphold, who are the source of this one world government. Verse 16. And this again is another curve. You think, okay, they're waging war against the Lamb, and the Lamb is going to overcome them. But there's also another aspect of the destruction of this city. Verse 16 says, the ten horns, these ten puppet kings which you saw, and the beast, these will hate the harlot. They're going to hate this world government, and will make her desolate and naked, and will eat her flesh, and will burn her up with fire. For God has put it in their hearts to execute His purpose by having a common purpose and by giving their kingdom to the beast until the words of God will be fulfilled. So there's going to be, not only is God going to destroy the city, but he's going to destroy it from within. There is a law that God has put into nature that you reap what you sow. If you live by the sword, you'll die by the sword. If you sow destruction, you'll reap destruction. If you sow life, you'll reap life. You're going to get what you put out. And even this one world government can't overthrow or stand against the law that God has put in place. You will get what's coming to you. And this tyrannical government, this one who is in authority over people, this one who is running roughshod over the world is going to turn against him. And that's the thing that happens in most tyrannical governments. I mean, you look at the Nazis, you look at Stalin, you look at communism. Now, there were a lot of pressures from the outside. There were wars that fought, but a lot of them fall simply from internal strife. Rome fell mostly from internal strife. It weakened itself and it couldn't fight against the outside forces. But it was the interior fighting. It was the disunity within the government that ultimately caused its fall. And that's what God is saying is going to happen here. It will not be able to stand because it's built upon immorality. It's built upon hatred and evil. And evil will always devour itself. It's always going to turn on itself. When you breed and encourage selfishness, selfishness will ultimately tear you apart. Greed will ultimately tear you apart. So there's going to be this internal strife that weakens and ultimately destroys this one world government. Verse 18, the woman whom you saw is the great city which reigns over the kings of the earth. In John's day, it was Rome. But he's not talking about Rome here. He's talking about a kingdom that is to come, a one world government that is set up and is led by Satan's puppet, the Antichrist, which ultimately is Satan himself. And it will not stand. It will be defeated, but it will cause a lot of trouble for Christians. I know there's a lot of questions. I don't know that I have any answers, but any thoughts or any questions?